Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and guys, today I'm going to take the bride challenge, which is try to review this movie without using the phrase big swing or swing. Joining me today is Devinder Hardawar.
The bride. It's bad.
And Jeff Cannata.
Guys, this remake culture is out of control. I can't believe somebody has already remade Joker Folie à Deux.
Those are, of course, all vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be reviewing The Bride, Maggie Gyllenhaal's newest film. By the way, I got that The Bride challenge from Maxence Vincent, a film critic, and I'm going to try to stick to it. Anyway, you can find
that
more
challenge, though, Dave, I have to say. It's a big swing.
Indeed. Big swing. Indeed. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at filmcast@gmail.com. If I sound sickly today, it's because I am not feeling well, guys. I got violently ill yesterday. It's weird. I'm pretty sure I got food poisoning yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And if it's sudden, it usually is.
That's the thing. Yeah. You know, you can feel it coming on. Like usually an illness, it's like, oh, you wake up the next day and you feel bad. And, you know, this was like my wife and I, we go take a walk and I'm like, something doesn't feel right. And then I rush back home and you know, my body just completely collapses after that. And I have essentially not left my room for the last 24 hours.
I'm sorry.
You can't tell, but Dave has a giant black splotch on the side of his face.
That's how you know he's damaged.
That's right. Yeah. I have a tattoo with damaged on my forehead.
Also, the first episode recorded from a toilet, so congrats on that. Yeah, congrats.
Yeah,
you know, think.
Yeah.
The food poisoning thing is weird because my wife and I eat a lot of the same foods. And so I'm like putting together like this whole timeline of like, okay, you ate this and I ate this and then you ate this, you know, and then
could
trying
be
to figure
anything.
It out.
If it's like you're seafood heavy over there and that can be, those are dynamites.
I'm pretty sure it was this grocery store salmon sashimi I bought at the end of a long day. Mm-hmm. You know, so just FYI,
you know,
don't trust it. Don't trust it, guys. Don't trust it.
It's always a grocery store sushi is always a gamble, even if you're right by Fresh Fish.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, just if I feel a little bit, if I sound a little bit less enthusiastic than usual, that is why. But anyway, let's get on with the show, folks. Let's get on with the show. Let's talk about what we've been watching today. And then we got some weekly plugs and then, of course, our review of The Bride. So let's get to it. We're going to start by talking about Hoppers. This is the newest Pixar film. Devinder Hardawar and I have seen this film. I'll be honest with you guys. We had debated between Hoppers and The Bride this week as our main review.
Should have been Hoppers.
Went with The Bride, and that's okay. You know, like we don't necessarily know what is going to be the more interesting good film to discuss. That said, I saw Hoppers this week along with Devinder.
Sometimes we get seduced by an exclamation point, Dave. That's what happens. Sometimes you see that exclamation point at the end of the title and you go, we have to do that one.
I'm going to say
point and a flashy trailer just gets us every time.
I mean, the trailer for The Bride was very good. I will say that Hoppers, by the way, might have been able to use the exclamation mark more in the title.
Wow. And put that out there. The first Pixar Hoppers! Movie named after the first Pixar movie named after drugs. It's amazing. What is this movie about?
Hoppers is about, first of all, by the way, in accordance with the cultural relevance of Avatar, I don't know if you know this, Jeff, but the James Cameron film Avatar is invoked by name in the trailer for Hoppers.
This is a movie that also out Avatar's Avatar, which I will point out. But yeah.
So it's about this girl who grows very attached to this glade near her grandmother's house. But the local evil mayor is trying to build a highway through the glade. And in order to try to prevent this from happening, they need to make sure that the glade is populated by all these animals, because you can't put a highway through the glade if there's all these animals there. And to do that, you need to get a beaver to a beaver is like a keystone animal. You get a beaver in there and like all the animals are going to follow. So they use this groundbreaking technology where you can transport people's brains into animals. And that's what she does to try and get some beavers to go to this local glade. That's essentially the very basic plot summary. And
is the one beaver the only beaver that's able to ride the giant Akhtar or whatever it's called?
I think Turuk Mokhtar. Jesus Christ, yeah. Jeff. Come on, man.
I know. I know.
You're the main Avatar Stan over here. Come on.
I need everybody to be aware that it's daylight savings time in America.
Yeah, we're
my
screwed.
Brain is fried cheese right now.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Okay. Here are my overall thoughts on Hoppers. This movie is a blast. It is very fun. And not only that, it is really, really wild Pixar. Like when I say wild Pixar, I'm talking about like if you think about like the Pixar from Up, right? The idea of, oh, a guy tying a bunch of balloons to his house and having them go off on big adventures, and there's talking dogs and mad scientists and shit like that. You know, it's like that level of, wow, wacky, zany ideas that are really, really out there. And so it is overall, I would say, a lot of fun and great for the whole family. I do have some reservations about it, but Devendra, just hear from you. I want to hear from you. Like, what are your overall thoughts on Hoppers?
I think this is my favorite Pixar movie in a very, very long time. There are so many goddamn talking animal movies, guys, even from Pixar alone, from Disney alone. But you got your Zootopias. You got your, not Disney, but the Sing movies. But you put talking animals in the thing, it will become a hit movie. What makes this movie special, I think, is that it is genuinely funny. It's hilarious. It's really creative. It's written and directed by Daniel Chong, the creator of We Bare Bears. So if you know that show and like sort of like the humor in that, there's a lot of that here. And it's just really like fun. You know, it doesn't get burdened by what Pixar tends to do sometimes. Like, oh man, this is a representation of all your emotions and feelings, and we got to resolve your trauma in this while these cartoon characters embody some, you know, really serious themes or something. No, it's a girl and a beaver. And it's hilarious. It's a girl and a beaver.
A girl and her beaver.
I like when they try to explain the plot, and there's a science-y answer, and then they're like, we put this, your brain, into that, the beaver. That's it. That's all you need to know. That's it.
Yeah, that is all you need to know.
That's all you need to know. I think this movie's great. I think the comedy is great. I think it's bonkers. I love the voice work in this, too. The evil mayor is played by John Hamm. You got a funny John Hamm. Got to love it. Jeff, I think you will love this movie. I brought both my kids to this movie. So this was my four-year-old's first movie in a cinema. We sat front row because it was one of those, like, not great theaters where you could actually sit front row and be a decent amount from the screen still. He left like maybe three quarters through the movie because he said it was a little too loud. So I think for him and for some kids, maybe bring like those headphones, you know, those just noise reducers.
Yeah.
So some kids may need that for movies because they play movies a lot, but he really liked it for what it was. And my daughter freaking loved it. So I just want to say, I love this movie. I think it's fantastic. Great themes, great humor, great characters. And I will say again, it out Avatar's Avatar in James Cameron's 9-hour long Avatar trilogy. This movie does something that Avatar has not yet done. And I think I think it deserves props for that, too. So
is,
I freaking
the answer
I
to that
love this
beavers.
The answer is this into that. It's great. It's great stuff. Yeah.
Allow me to be a woke wet blanket on your extremely positive review
of
the film. Right?
I'm used to it, by the way, audience. It's nothing new over here.
There's been a lot of press from people over at Pixar, Pete Docter and so on, who have talked about some of the changes that they've tried to make to their approach.
Yeah.
Two things in particular. One, there was a report that came out about how some people believe that they tried to tone down the environmentalist messages of the film. In my opinion, that is something they did do. Like the plot and themes show signs of that, in my opinion. And secondarily, it is just really interesting to consider this movie in comparison with Turning Red, which is another film by Pixar that features an Asian American female protagonist. That movie, Turning Red, I think, which I think, Devendra, you were a big fan of. I love that movie as well. But that girl's Asian identity was an extremely critical part of that movie. Like, you literally could not make Turning Red without that person being
It was literally about, like, Asian mythology in some respects, too. So, yeah.
That's right. Whereas in this film, that is not the case. It's an Asian American girl who plays the protagonist, but her Asian American identity is not at all part of the story, you know, in any meaningful way. Arguably, unrecognizably, you know, like what I mean by that is, like, I would argue there's very few Asian Americans that have this person's lived experience in life. And so there's nothing wrong with that. This is, I guess this would be kind of like race blind casting, you know, like, is, and there are some benefits of race blind casting, but there's also limitations of race blind casting. And I would say those were definitely felt in this movie as well. So does that mean the movie is not a good time? Not at all. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's not an enjoyable film. I'm not saying don't go take your family. Like, it's still a blast. It is a really fun Pixar movie. It is out there. It is wild. It is ridiculous. It's funny. But at the same time, I think it's also important to keep in mind, like, what are the messages of these kinds of films? And I do think Pixar is kind of sanding the edges off a little bit, you know, these days. They're kind of sanding the edges off a little bit.
The complaint that it's not environmentalist enough is a strange one, because literally this movie is you gotta take care of the earth. We are all in this together, like us humans and animals and the environment, everything. So I would love to know, like, what other things we're saying.
I would say, you know, for a really good like Polygon did a review of this movie that kind of explains what it's hard to get into without spoiling the movie, really. So like, it's less about how the movie handles the environment and more about how the movie handles people trying to destroy the environment. But what I'm saying,
I see that there. Yeah, it does like kid movie-esque things for the villains, and
yeah, absolutely,
totally,
absolutely,
totally understand that. But I will say,
still think the movie is really enjoyable, and it is probably, as you said, one of my favorite Pixar movies in a while. Just super out there. You love it when a movie takes a big swing. You know, that's all I'm saying. So
big swing.
Right. Oh, you failed.
The theme of the episode. Yeah,
it wasn't about the bride. All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
The movie's Hoppers.
An actual big swing is Hoppers. Yeah.
Hoppers. It's available right now in theaters. It's something Devendra Hardwar and I have been watching.
Take your kids.
Devendra, hit us up with something else you've been watching.
I've been watching a lot of freaking Spider-Man. Spider-Mans. because again, my kids, once they find a thing, they go down the rabbit hole. So it was Ghostbusters a couple of weeks ago. We got through a lot of Ghostbusters. And they wanted to watch, my son especially, wanted to watch a Spider-Man. We've already watched Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 1. But he saw images of, like, the MCU Spider-Man, the Tom Holland Spider-Man. He's like, can we get some of this? Can we get into this action? It made me think, they have not seen any MCU movies before. This is the intro to the MCU. So we watched Spider-Man Homecoming, which my entire family loved. I don't even think my wife saw that movie. My son and daughter loved that. We did watch Far From Home. We have not seen the third one yet because I think that one's a little more traumatic and harder for kids, maybe.
No Way Home, right?
No, yeah. I always forget the title of that. I don't even think that one may be streaming on Disney Plus, but it may be locked out of kids' accounts because it's a little violent. But they freaking love it. And I do want to say, if you have a young child, you want to get them into the MCU, you don't need the introduction of Iron Man or anything. Iron Man is everywhere. Iron Man's in cartoons. Iron Man's like an idea that kids will grok pretty easily. But what they love is Mr. Peter. They love a Peter Parker. I think Spider-Man Homecoming in particular is a great intro to Peter Parker, to the idea of Spider-Man, to the idea of your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. It's still really funny. That movie holds up well. My kids don't understand the impact of having Michael Keaton be a bird villain in this movie. They don't understand that yet. We're going to eventually get into the Batman movies, but I feel like that's a couple years away. But as an introduction to the MCU, I think Spider-Man Homecoming is the one. Because I think back to, like, the first Iron Man, that is a fun movie. That is very much a teen-oriented movie, teen or, like, actual adults, right? Because it's dealing with, like, the American role in war. It's dealing with a weapons dealer trying to become a hero. It's dealing with big adult things. And maybe not great for kids, or at least not as interesting for kids. So we may work back to some of the MCUs, but right now, their MCU introduction is entirely around Spider-Man, and we may branch out from this. So maybe to other things. Maybe we'll do, like, the Doctor Strange where Spider-Man kind of appears a little bit too. I don't know.
Well, here's a question, Devendra. Spider-Man Homecoming is not Peter Parker's, or rather, this version.
They kind of screwed it up, didn't they? Because they introed him in Civil War.
In Civil War, which came out the year before, 2016.
It's fine. Right? It's fine.
Were your kids like, oh my God, what's going on? I don't have the context for this character.
It's fine. It's fine. Because these characters are like freaking... They're just everywhere. They know a Spider-Man. They're sold Spider-Man all the time.
So they're like, oh, there's Iron Man. Iron Man's here for some reason. They don't care. I get it. Why didn't they introduce this character earlier in the film? That's ridiculous. They didn't say
I've read in the Wikipedia they introduced this character in a very specific way. We don't even get to see him bit by a spider. They didn't need all that. They're just like, hey, that kid is Spider-Man. They're like, okay, Spider-Man. I get it.
So it's interesting. It's interesting. Like, you didn't... I would think that you would want Raimi Spider-Man to be the first Spider-Man.
We did that. So they also have the core introduction.
You've already done that before.
Yes.
So your kid's like, why doesn't he have little goo coming out of his wrists?
Exactly. Well, I did explain that in some Spider-Mans don't have the goo. Most Spider-Mans don't have the goo. You gotta make it. And I'm like, this one's a scientist and he's making the webbing. They're like, oh, that's interesting. And they have all these little gadgets. I just want to say Spider-Man Homecoming, that's a special little movie. It's really funny. The kids are great. The humor is great. The villains are great. Like, just great on every level. No Way Home, a lot more confusing, a lot more, like, not as satisfying as a movie. Like, Homecoming is just such a great high school movie, too. Like, it's just funny, great all around. It also feels like a movie where they had the pressure of, like, oh, the director, who I think only did, like, Copland before that or something. Not Copland. It was a small movie.
Cop Car.
But like it felt like they had something to prove. And, you know, No Way Home came a couple years after that. And then we got the third one, several years ago.
It was Homecoming, Far From Home, and then No Way Home.
Then No Way Home. Far From Home came like 2 years after Homecoming. So they were like, you know, they just kept filming these things, basically, or just stayed in it. So anyway, Homecoming's still great. We're eventually going to branch out to other MCU stuff. I have not mapped out the sort of stratagem here of how to do it, but this stuff is all in the zeitgeist. So they know the characters. The kids all love the characters. My son in particular loves Spider-Man. So we're just kind of going to go off from there. We're going to do Raimi Spider-Man 2 at some point. And I feel like that's also the big one. We're going to do another rewatch of like Into the Spider-Verse, and they haven't seen Across the Spider-Verse. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. Just so much Spider-Man stuff around, so much MCU stuff around. You can pick and choose, and the kids have the luxury of not sitting. They don't have to sit through Wave 2 of the MCU. What a relief! All those sequels that nobody cares about anymore. It's amazing what you can do now.
So, are you going to take your kids to go see Spider-Man: Brand New Day coming out later this year? Probably.
I mean, sure. If we're going to do the third one, so we'll be down for Brand New Day. And my daughter's 7, so she's like more into doing like big things in the theater. And maybe my son will be down to do more too.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, that is the MCU Spider-Man, and that Spider-Man. Is something Devinder Hardar has been watching this week.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by SVS. Let's talk, folks. Let's get serious. Let's talk about a problem that no one wants to admit they have. That's right, it's the giant TV problem. You bought the giant TV. I got the giant TV. It's beautiful. It's basically a portal to another world. It's massive. And then you say to yourself, well, I'm sure the built-in speakers on this ultra-thin slab of glass are totally fine. Who needs better sound than what's already on this teeny tiny little thin monstrosity of a television? Guess what? They're not fine. Those postage stamp size TV speakers, yeah, they're doing their best, but they're fighting physics by trying to reproduce action sequences or orchestral sound scores or even whispered dialogue. It's an impossible job. Guess what? SVS exists to fix that. They make speakers and subwoofers that bring real cinematic sound into your home. The kind where explosions actually have weight, music gives you chills, and the dialogue doesn't sound like it's coming from your kid's toy. You know what I'm saying? The best part is SVS gear is designed for real people, real rooms, and real budgets. And they back it up with free shipping, free returns, and a risk-free in-home trial so you can actually hear the difference for yourself with no risk. If you have already gone big on your TV, don't let it be held hostage by bad audio. Go to svsound.com and give your movies the sonic upgrade they deserve with SVS. Again, svsound.com.
Jeff Cannata, hit us up with something you've been watching this week.
Well, I checked out the new HBO series Rooster that just debuted this last weekend, and I've only seen the premiere episode. This is a show created by Bill Lawrence and Matt Tarsis. Stars Steve Carell and Charlie Clive as father-daughter. Steve Carell is an author. In a world where authors still matter, this is a fantasy show where people who write books are matter to college students, which is pretty amazing idea. His daughter, it's about this relationship between Steve Carell and his adult daughter. The central idea here is that Steve Carell's wife cheated on him at a certain point, and now his daughter's husband is cheating on her. And so they have this connection point of being cheated on by their spouse and sort of having to deal with that situation. And I love Carell. I really do. I mean, I was never a huge The Office, The American Office person, so mm-hmm. I don't really have him locked into that role as I think a lot of people do in their minds. Everything he's done post Office has just been. I really think he makes great decisions on projects to do. He's really interested in pushing himself as an actor, it seems, and I think this is a great part for him. It is Steve Carell at his most sort of sensitive and vulnerable. You know, he plays a wonderful, sensitive, vulnerable dude and kind of a lunkhead, but also, you know, just like heart first kind of guy. And I think he's great. And it's an interesting relationship between he and his daughter. There's kind of romance going on. I paired this with DTF St. Louis this weekend, which I'll get to later. But I think both of them are similar, like pair well together. They're both similar in tone in that they both kind of oscillate between this very grounded, emotional place and this kind of wacky, bizarre goofballery. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Being able to hold those two tones in tension with one another at all times. I really enjoy that balancing act. It's not easy to pull off because sometimes one will undermine the other or make the other seem strange. And somehow both of these series do it well. But like I said, only one episode in, but I'm really enjoying Rooster on HBO Max, the one to watch for HBO Max.
Not a great title for the show because I keep forgetting what it's actually about. I was like, oh, that's the Steve Carell show. Okay.
Yeah, in the context of the show, he's an author who writes this character called Rooster. So it's kind of sort of like
this is a terrier's problem. This is like yes, you're thinking too hard problem. About the title.
Yeah but it's yeah. like he's the character's like Reacher. It's like a Reacher kind of like he's like a
okay. Kind of, I see. You know, the character Rooster is like Reacher, is what you're saying.
Yeah. That's the sense I get. He's yeah. like a character who
it's
has
a show about a guy who writes a book about a guy that's like Reacher. Okay. That's why it's called Rooster.
The show is not at all about the Rooster character.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. That's Rooster. And it's something Jeff Cannata has been watching. Guys, I often, first of all, let me just say it's slightly harder than usual to figure out what movies are playing at local theaters. Like you can go to the movie website, but sometimes I can't get into the movie website because I'm using like a VPN. And so often I'll know exactly one movie showtime that I'm going to watch at my local theater. And then I'll just go there. And if there's something else that happens to be playing there that I'm interested in, I'll just do a double header. Right.
It's like the 90s.
Yeah, like, that's right.
Going to a movie theater. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So you remember when people used to just go and they would just see whatever was there?
Working at the movie theater, it never failed to astonish me how people would show up and walk up to the booth. Yeah. They stood in line. They walk up and they go, what's playing?
Yeah, what's
going on? Playing?
If only. As a child, I learned how to look up listings in the newspaper.
You got what's out of playing? Bed, put clothes on, got in your car, drove down here. No idea. No idea what you were going to see. No clue. What's playing? Oh, well, let me tell you. Insane.
Well, I have become that person, Jeff.
Yeah, you're my dad.
I mean, so I went to go see The Bride, or A Noiva, as they call it here in Portugal. And then usually there's like a movie playing right afterwards. And so I watched this movie called Pillion.
I wanted to see this.
Have you guys heard of this A24 film, Pillion?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Pillion is about two men in a BDSM relationship. Now,
This is the 51st shade of gray, I believe, isn't it?
I have to just acknowledge that I am not in the BDSM community, so like I cannot sort of comment on this film as an insider. I know it's actually there is some amount of controversy over how this film depicts those kinds of relationships, because I'll just say vaguely, like it is not necessarily the optimal BDSM relationship, and leave it there. But it's about this guy who's played by Harry Melling. Do you guys know who Harry Melling is? He plays Dursley in the Harry Potter movies.
Yep.
And he's kind of coded in the film as a loser. His job is he writes parking tickets for people at like a mall. And then in his spare time, he's in a barbershop quartet. And I was like, it was only until after I was like, wait a second. I think they're trying to imply that it's a loser thing to be in a barbershop quartet.
Yeah, you're looking at that. You're like, wait a minute. This wait guy's got it all.
That's not. And then all of a sudden, one day, he meets Alexander Skarsgård. And Alexander Skarsgård, guys, I don't know if you are aware of this, but he is a very attractive individual.
Yeah, a god among men. Yeah.
Yes. And so Alexander Skarsgård kind of recruits him to be a sub in their relationship, and the movie explores the dynamic between the two of them. I have to say, I love this film. I thought it was very beautiful, and it's about it's essentially like a love story, but in the context of a BDSM relationship. And it's a very, in my opinion, beautifully told love story. It's about like trying to find your people, trying to fit in, right? Trying to like figure out, trying to solve the problem of loneliness, trying to find your community. And I thought it was really, really beautifully done. I agree with some of the complaints that like the issues of consent are not very well navigated in the film. But it didn't strike me as unrealistic in any way. You know, it struck me as like, this is a totally like realistic thing that could happen to someone. I just thought it was a beautiful, beautiful movie. It's probably, it has catapulted itself into the consideration for another top film of 2026, along with Nirvana, the band that showed the movie. Like, that's how good it is, in my opinion. Just a beautiful, heartfelt, empathetic portrait of both of the main characters in the film. And I just really feel very strongly about it, that I think Pillion is a great film.
Yeah, shout out to Skarsgård for, again, another actor who seems to always be taking interesting roles. I saw the trailer for this one. I was like, that feels like a thing Skarsgård would go for. And yeah, looking forward to seeing it.
So I bought a ticket to go see Pillion, and I walk inside the theater, and it's empty. Right. And I look around and it's empty. And so I'm like, oh, that's cool. A private screening of Pillion for myself. Now, I was like, you know, just in case there's someone in there, I'm not going to be like totally, wild in my viewing of the movie. But maybe I was a little bit more expressive than I would have been otherwise. You know, it's funny. I'm laughing loudly. I'm exclaiming when certain wild things happen in the film. There is some extremely graphic sex in the film, and extremely graphic sexual acts in the film. And I'm reacting to that, and I'm just having a really pure cinematic experience. And then the movie ends, and I stand up to leave, and I realize that there has been one other person in the theater with me the entire time. It's this old Portuguese lady who's sitting in the back. She's like 4'6" or whatever. You can't even see her head over the seats.
Oh.
And she looked like she was 70, 80 years old. And we had watched Pillion together this whole
her
time.
Her hair
and,
blow back. Just blow back. Let that THX down. Yeah.
The smile never left her face. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. I really wanted to know what she thought of the movie, but, might have been a language barrier there. So anyway.
Thumbs up. Just walk out. Thumbs up.
So I would recommend Pillion. It is not for kids. It is not to watch with your parents.
Not for kids. Yes.
Dave will watch it with somebody else's parent.
Yeah.
I did watch it with someone else's parent, probably. I guess that's technically true, huh, Jeff? Like, a lot of the time, a movie that you wouldn't watch with your parents, you might be watching it with other people's parents.
Yeah.
Right? If you think about it. Anyway, it's Pillion. I believe it is available right now in theaters, but it was in theaters here in Portugal, and that's how I saw it. And that is something I've been watching this week. Devinder Hardwar, hit us up with something else you've been watching.
Oh, yeah. I want to thank you, Jeff, for recommending Kif on Disney Plus. I started watching it with my kids. They're digging it. It reminds me a lot of like those really quirky, creative like 90s cartoons that I grew up with, too. So like a bit of Rocko's Modern Life, a bit of like the zaniness of stuff you'd find in Cartoon Network. This is the show about, Squirrel and her bunny friend, and they get into misadventures. It feels like a good follow-up to the DuckTales reboot, which my kids are watching over and over and over again. So definitely fits right in there, too. And it was also my way of breaking the Ghostbusters rewatch cycle. You got to find ways to break the cycles, folks, because your kids will want to see the same movies over and over again. So you got to jam something in there in the rewatch cycle and see what happens. And Kif took on incredibly well. So it's really funny, really well animated, too. Like there's humor in the animation. There's humor in the backgrounds. There's lots of just random little jokes in there. There's the Kill Bill siren noise appeared at one point in one of the early episodes. And the parents get that. Parents know what's up with that. The kids have no idea what's going on. Kif is a lot of fun. It's on Disney Plus. Check it out.
I'm so glad you have checked this out. I want more people to be talking about this show. I really
they
do
don't
think
promote it. Like I didn't know, I did not know this existed. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm so glad it has, I think, what, 3 seasons now? So it's mm-hmm. It's not a one and done, but somebody's watching it, but I don't feel like anybody's talking about it, and more people need to. It's really, really fun.
Mm-hmm. That is Kif, honestly.
More talking animals, by the way. It's always talking animals. Always.
When I hear Kif, where my mind goes to the Futurama character, the alien dude.
Yep.
Different guy, though. Different guy. Different guy. Kif is something else Devendra's been watching. Jeff, hit us up with something else you've been watching.
As I mentioned, checked out DTF St. Louis. I know you guys have talked about this previously, but second episode premiere. So I've watched the first two, and I am so in on this show. You guys know I'm a Jason Bateman head, but this has many of my favorite actors. Love Linda Cardellini. Love Richard Jenkins. That's my boy. He's one of my favorite character actors in the world. David Harbour's great. This show, as I mentioned when talking about Rooster, is in this wonderful, wonderful place of being completely ridiculous and also deadly serious at the same time. Like it's really goofy and really funny, really bending over on my couch laughing so hard, funny, but also it's got this air of prestige television seriousness.
It's playing with that. It's playing with our expectations of prestige TV's like somebody's been murdered, who has done the murder, but also every scene is completely ridiculous.
Yes.
Love that about the show.
Yeah. It's so great. And Harbour in particular is just deadpanning his way through this such funny stuff, where he's a sign language interpreter, ASL interpreter, who you know, he gets a job doing a hip hop thing. And so he wants to be better at it. And he doesn't want to just do the sign language. He wants to give a feeling of it. So he takes dance class. It's just so great. It's so great. And the second episode in particular has like some of the hottest, but also most ridiculous flirting that I've ever seen between Jason Bateman and Linda Cardellini. Like they're like, do you want to have an affair? You know, flirting is, the way they do it is it's super hot. It's like super hot, but it's also dorky and stupid. And I don't know how the show managed to marry those things all the time, but it constantly does. And I am so into this show. Like the tone, I love it so very much. So DTF St. Louis, I know that it has already been recommended on the show, but I wanted to underscore that.
So you're
that.
Also DTW, DTF St. Louis. All right. Down to watch.
Yes. Let's go. I am down to watch for sure.
Dave, you've got to get into this. And it's so hard to get back into old shows, but if you like this vibe, Jeff, if you've never seen Patriot is such a, it's very similar, but along like spy stuff, and it's hilarious.
Cool.
DTF St. Louis is on HBO Max. During a recent episode of the Filmcast After Dark, which is available at patreon.com/filmpodcast, Jeff Cannata and I committed to watching Tom Noonan's film that he wrote and directed called What Happened Was...
I mean, it seems a little more stringent when you put it that way.
This is a film that won a Sundance Grand Jury Prize. And Tom Noonan, obviously a veteran character actor who recently passed away. And so it's like, oh, hey, he made this film a long time ago that I had never heard of. But, you know, he put a lot of heart and thought into it. And it was well received at the time. And so it's like, hey, let's check this out and see if we can honor that work by watching it, you know, and maybe talking about it a little here on the Filmcast. Yeah. Jeff, you're laughing. What's
because you present it like this noble undertaking, and I failed at it.
So, you know, Jeff, you tried. So we both.
It was the least we could do for this late great actor who did so much, put so much of his heart and soul in. The least we could do
is at least dedicate 90 minutes to this film and then maybe say a few words about it here on the Filmcast. So Jeff and I both attempted to watch What Happened Was... this last week. And one of us succeeded, but Jeff, you tried watching it. What was your, you know, you didn't make it to the end. So kind of what?
No, I did not. This movie ends with an ellipses, as did I.
The title did. Yeah.
Yes. The title ends with an ellipses. Here's the way this happened. I paid $4.99 to rent this movie.
And I will tell you, by the way, the way I did it was I went to Prime Video Channels, and you can sign up for a free trial for Cineverse.
Ooh.
Which has this movie.
I did not do that.
Yeah, and then you can watch it on Prime Video Channels, and then you can cancel the Cineverse if you don't want to watch it anymore.
I straight up rented this movie for $4.99, which gave me 48 hours to watch it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I got through maybe a half an hour of this movie before I tapped out the first go. And I said to myself, I'll go back. I can't right now. I can't do this right now. But within 48 hours, surely I'll work up the gumption to return to What Happened Was... But no, I stuck with the .. and never got, and then the 48 hours expired. And then I said to myself, there is no goddamn way I'm spending another $4.99.
Well, Jeff, fortunately you don't have to, because as I said, you can subscribe to Cineverse,
yeah,
a streaming service that I did not know existed until now, and watch What Happened Was for free. Okay. So here's the deal. So Tom Noonan, again, legendary character actor. He's been in Heat and Last Action Hero and Synecdoche, New York, right? Very talented person that you'll probably recognize. He wrote and directed this film called What Happened Was. The idea behind the film is that these two people who work at a law firm decide to go on a date at the woman's house. And she works as an executive assistant. He works as a paralegal. And... You know what, Jeff? You know what this reminded me of is we live in a real disposable throwaway culture these days, right? Because back in the old days, if you went on a date that was bad, you would just sit there and endure that date, right? Like if you went on a date that was awkward,
still left. That was
I'm
still
sure
a
that's
thing.
True, Dave. But okay,
yeah, people
you
still
would
left.
Just sit there and endure that date. And
I think you're talking about yourself right now.
Nowadays, people like they're ghosting people mid meal. Like it is a very common
story.
Well,
this woman should have ghosted this dude.
Yeah,
three sentences into this date, she should have been like, "Get out of my house." That's what when I turned this movie off, I was like, I cannot suffer this man any longer. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting, I guess, character piece, and you tell me where it goes and if it was more worthwhile later on. But the way the movie starts is this woman who is taking great care in preparing for this date, seems to be invested in the moment a lot, and then this dude shows up and he is such a jerk. Such an insufferable jerk. And I was just like, I have no desire to watch this man.
Yeah.
Noonan. And he wrote it for himself to be this jerk. So he must have some point, but I couldn't take it.
Yeah. Nowadays people will like ghost people mid meal. Like they're in the middle of a meal and then they'll be like, "Hey, I got to go to the bathroom." And then they're just gone.
Well, that always happened. That always happened. But I just want to let's not rewrite history here. There were comedy bits. These were setups in shows. People left mid-date all the time, dude. Maybe it's more common now, but it was a thing.
I think it is more common now, and I think it was less common back then. And I think
back in the dates you were doing in the 90s.
And I think back in the day, you would just go on a date that was bad, and you would just endure it, and then until it was over. And
again, it's her house. So where's she gonna go?
True. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I think you should leave.
You can't ghost someone in your own house. You have to ask them to go.
That's actually where the Tim Robinson Show title comes from. Is like her saying that in this movie. Yeah. No, she doesn't actually say that. But okay.
Yeah, I would rather hang out with Tim Robinson in any role than this guy.
Wow.
Than Tom Noonan in this role.
Wow.
Okay. So I would agree that it is an excruciating watch, and it is a painfully awkward date where these two lonely souls in the midst of New York reaching out into the ether to try to make some kind of connection, and it's really hard. It's really hard.
Do you think he's trying as hard as she is, though? I mean, maybe it changes.
He showed up, Jeff. He showed up.
Oh, wow. Standing ovation for that guy. Showed up.
So it's about these two people like reaching out to try to make some kind of connection and it not quite going as well as you might imagine or you might hope for them. Two people who are really, really different, right? Like they have very little in common, but nonetheless they feel like maybe there's something that might connect the two of them. And so for most of the film, it is just this extremely awkward dialogue between the two of them. Well performed, I think you'd agree, Jeff.
I would agree.
You know, like just you buy that these two people are who they are in the film. And
like, I also feel like I've met that guy.
Yeah.
Right. Kudos to the writing and the performance in that it is recognizable, but it is that guy that you just do not want to be around. That gives no inch to any conversation. I like this thing, really? No. Why would you like that?
Right.
Those are terrible. Okay. All right. We're just making small talk here, pal. I don't know. I was trying to, you know what? We're going to freaking die on this hill right now. That's every moment of this movie.
Yeah. 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 All I will say is that I guess you could consider this a mild spoiler for the Tom Noonan film What Happened Was, but that there is some emotional vulnerability towards the end of the film that I personally found very moving, you know? And I texted you, Jeff. I was like, I don't think that makes it worth watching the film, but I will say like the ending of the film really, it makes like, I'm going to be thinking about the ending of the film for a while. I'll just put it that way. Like it was very thought provoking because I can't get into it without spoiling it, but I'll just say that, it doesn't just stay in that one mode the whole time. You know, it changes modes at some point. And I was very moved. I was very moved by the end. And I always appreciate it, you know, when, like, Tom Noonan didn't make, like, 30 movies, right? Like, he made a couple, if I'm not mistaken. And so it's like, he felt like there's something important enough about life and the human condition to be worth pouring in years of his life into this thing. Based off of a stage play, I believe, just to be clear. And I felt like what was communicated was worthwhile. You know, it was a worthwhile thing to communicate. So anyway, my thoughts on what happened was, that said, do not begrudge Jeff at all for piecing out. Like, it is really hard. It's a hard watch. It's a tough sit. So, but I had a good time, or I enjoyed it and appreciated it for what it was. The movie is What Happened Was, and it is available right now streaming on Cineverse. Cineverse. There you go. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more of the show right after this. Let's do a few weekly plugs, folks.
We're going to do weekly plugs.
Weekly plugs is part of show each week where we plug something else we've been making. I just want to throw a quick shout out for Decoding TV, the podcast that I do with Patrick Lepik. This week we covered, or for the next few weeks, we'll be covering The Pit, which we recap and review in depth every episode, as well as DTF St. Louis. You know, honestly, Patrick was a lot more mixed on DTF St. Louis than you guys. And I have to say, David Chen, I've only watched one episode. I have to watch the second one. I got sick, so I couldn't check it out, but I'm a little bit unsure of what the show is going to be at this point still. You know, like, I'm enjoying it, but it's like,
oh man, so you're ready to ruin the show for yourself. That's what you're doing. That's what you're doing here.
No,
like, I don't know where this is going. Got to prevent the joy right now. That's in front of me.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That's a good way of summarizing all the podcasts I didn't do. But yes, check it out. Decoding TV, wherever you get your podcasts, covering The Pit and DTF St. Louis. Devendra Hardwar, your weekly plug.
Yeah, check out the Engadget podcast. We had a big episode last week. I talked about the MacBook Neo. I was in New York for a couple of days to see the debut of that thing. Really cool. Look out for my review coming up later this week. I'm a big fan of this thing because it's $599 and it's like just enough computer for a lot of people. We also talked about the ongoing fight between Anthropic and the Department of Defense. And I got freaking Spencer Ackerman on to talk about it. He is a longtime national security journalist. He writes about warfare. He's doing the current run of Iron Man. So if, like, anybody is going to talk about the use of AI in warfare right now, it's him. Legendary guest spot on the Engadget podcast. Just his intro to that episode is, I had to cut it out and cap it because it's amazing. So check out that episode of the Engadget podcast, especially for Spencer Ackerman.
Very cool. Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
I don't talk about it enough, but I do a comedy science show, award-winning comedy science show. We won a podcast award. I don't know why, but we did. It's called We Have Concerns, and I do it every single week with Anthony Carboni. You may know him from Star Wars stuff. He hosts lots of Star Wars things. But he and I have been doing We Have Concerns for way longer than I'd like to admit. And the latest episode, you guys remember when we heard about how much microplastics we all have specifically in our testicles? How much microplastic we all have just scooting around in our bodies at all times. Well, it turns out the study that told us that, pretty flawed. Mm. And we get
small sample size, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Much more wrong with it than that. But yes, we get into all the details. It doesn't necessarily mean microplastics aren't bad for you. But we have a new episode called Microplastics Aren't a Big Deal, which is not necessarily true. It's kind of an ironic title.
Wow.
But it's good fun to listen to.
Very clickbaity title, Jeff.
You got to do what you got to do, David.
Absolutely.
Also, Anthony wrote that title. Usually I write the titles. And Anthony wrote that one. Anyway, so check it out over at wehaveconcerns.com.
You know, I do have a random question for you guys as we're getting into our review of The Bride today, which is, how does Dr. Frankenstein keep track of his body parts? How does Dr. Frankenstein keep track of his body parts? Hmm. Anyway,
Dr. Frankenstein?
Yeah,
doctor. Oh, okay, because yes. he's using.
Did I stutter?
Parts.
Did I stutter? I also want to throw a shout out for patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can get ad-free episodes, early access episodes, and exclusive After Dark episodes, where we commit to watching movies that sometimes make an appearance on the podcast, you know, whether or not people watch them or not. patreon.com/filmpodcast. Of course, we never want anyone to donate if it in any way causes them financial hardship. You can always support us for free by just leaving a star rating for us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. It really does help. Thanks to everyone who helps us support the show in any way. All right, folks, let's get to our review of The Bride.
What happened?
You had an accident.
An accident, huh?
We dug you up. Then we brought you back to life.
Get on stage, and I call her by her first name.
What did you want with a dead girl?
I'm the same. Born from the dead. I am a monster.
Yeah, so am I.
He uses an organizer. He uses an organizer.
Wow. Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Wow. Get it.
Every week we sink to new lows.
Welcome to the Filmcast review of The Bride. I'm going to read the plot summary of this film from IMDb. According to IMDb, in 1930 Chicago, Frankenstein asks Dr. Euphonious to help create a companion. They give life to a murdered woman as the bride, sparking romance, police interest, and radical social change. End quote. The Bride is a film that cost around $80 to $90 million. And performed disastrously at the box office this weekend, making only $13.6 million worldwide, of which $7.3 was domestic. It's estimated that Warner Brothers is probably going to lose around $90 million on this film. So definitely a financial catastrophe. But the question is, here's the thing. Sometimes the public doesn't recognize greatness in its time. Mm-hmm. And maybe the movie deserves better than it performed at the box office. Devendra Hardwar, what do you think? Did The Bride deserve better at the box office this last weekend?
No, I think the public's pretty spot on this one. The thing about The Bride is that I've been a little suspicious about this movie ever since the trailer first appeared, because it's this really kinetic, highly stylized trailer. Oh, Maggie Gyllenhaal is doing a movie about sort of the Bride of Frankenstein. It's Christian Bale. It's freaking Jesse Buckley. Like, it was a very, I would say, overcranked trailer. And there are times where I'm like, oh, what are you? Feels like you're trying to really sell something here that it maybe not actually in the movie itself. So I think the Bride made for a really fun trailer and really stylistic trailer. And there are some good bits in this movie. I think specifically Jesse Buckley and Christian Bale just being a little unhinged playing these characters. He is Frank the monster. And, you know, she is the Bride of Frankenstein. Like, there is some good stuff in here.
By the way, setting back the dialogue of, is it Frankenstein or Frankenstein's monster back by like decades?
He took on the name. That's all.
His name is Frank in the movie. Way to increase the confusion there, Christian Bale. Thanks.
So
for that.
Confusing.
It's so Christian Bale's fault.
Yeah.
But this movie is just like way too much and unfocused and like overly stylized to the point where like I don't know what it's trying to be or what story it's trying to tell. There's just a lot going on here, and there's a lot that's like vaguely entertaining. Like I do, like I said, think Jesse Buckley. I will watch her in anything. This is sort of like you see Jesse Buckley just going crazy for, you know, 2 hours. That's fine. It's, you know, sort of entertaining. Penelope Cruz and Peter Skarsgård in this too. Penelope Cruz is a detective, and I quite liked her role there. But the actual like mechanics of this movie don't make sense. There's stuff we could talk about in spoilers, but. You know, there's the idea of like freaking Mary Shelley is a part of this movie.
Here, Devendra, let me read to you from the first paragraph of the plot summary of this film from Wikipedia. Okay. Speaking from the afterlife, Mary Shelley says she has a story she wanted to tell after the book Frankenstein, but could not due to her death. To tell it, she possesses Ida, a woman living in 1936 Chicago, who in her trance proceeds to discuss the criminal activities of mob boss Lupino.
As one does.
Lupino's henchmen, Clyde and James, discreetly kill her afterwards. Quote. That is
it's,
the...
uh, It's like too much. And also, it doesn't make sense. It's the spirit of Mary Shelley, but it's also taking place in a universe where Dr. Frankenstein actually existed.
Yes. Like, and then, but also, Divendra, not in the time period of Frankenstein, for some reason in 1936 Chicago.
Well, they address that. They're like, you should be 100 years old. And yes, it kind of reflects all that, but it doesn't make sense. Yeah. It's an author talking about their book, but now the characters exist in the real. You lost me in 5 minutes, movie.
Like, as incoherent as that paragraph that you read of description was, the movie is less coherent than that.
Mm, yeah,
the beginning of the movie is less. Like, you get a realization much later that that's what happened at the first in the first 20 minutes of the movie, but in the context of the movie, not so much.
I mean, it's kind of there, but it's also like, you know what would make this movie even better? Not even doing that. Yeah. Not even confusing. Yes. If the Mary Shelley stuff was not even in here, you don't need it. It doesn't add anything to this movie. Just cut that out and focus on, like, this is a reinterpretation of The Bride of Frankenstein. We are grownups as an audience. We can just deal with that. My kids can jump into Spider-Man within any timeline, be like, that's Spider-Man. I get it. I know what's going on here. There are webs. He's fighting crime. I get it. What is funny is that this movie is essentially fan fiction, sort of in the way that Wuthering Heights was like a fan fiction reinterpretation of that. This is like a Bride of Frankenstein fan fiction that's sort of like trying to re-emphasize the sort of like feminist ideas of telling that story or of that character, even though Mary Shelley was already doing that in the original Frankenstein. Because Mary Shelley was a genius, and you should just read that book. It is wild to me how this movie just like throws so much at the wall and doesn't make any of it stick. There are dance sequences. There are like, I don't understand the motivations for some of these characters. Even the basic thing of what you just described, the gangsters killed her. It was an accident. They didn't even like purposefully kill her for a specific reason. It was just an accident. So it's not even like she's out here like the bride from Kill Bill seeking revenge. She just died.
She was also literally, the guy thought she was being possessed by a demon.
The guy was like,
guess what? She was being possessed by a demon.
In the 30s, sure. They could probably clock that pretty easily in the 1930s. But also, at least the motivation for the killing, the motivation for starting this entire story, there is none. She slipped on some stairs. What are you doing, movie?
What are you doing, movie?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on The Bride?
Well, Dave, you can probably tell what my thoughts on The Bride are, but they are best summed up in the form of a limerick. This film couldn't seem to decide where it wanted its plot to reside. A movie monster satire, a Me Too amplifier, or a Frankenstein Bonnie and Clyde.
Nice, Jeff. Very nicely done.
You thought I was going to rhyme bride, but I didn't. If Divendra is 100% correct, this movie is a total mess. Total mess. There are too many layers. It doesn't know at all what it wants to be. It's like throwing so many things at the wall that none of them work. None of them make sense. It did remind me, as I said in the intro of our show, it did remind me of Joker Folie à Deux, in that it wants to sort of be this screed. There's so many similarities between this movie and that movie. I will tell you, there's dance numbers that come out of nowhere for no reason. There's like a populist uprising that is inspired by the main character's face paint. there's a lot of similarities. Another similarity is that neither of those movies worked at all for me. There is a phenomenon that I am very familiar with, have experienced many, many times as somebody who has, trained as an actor, known lots of actors, worked with lots of actors. Actors love acting and they love actors who act. And I have not seen Maggie Gyllenhaal's first directorial movie, and I don't know this to be true, but it seems to me that, boy, Maggie Gyllenhaal loves actors who act. And she, it seems to me, in the creation of this film, got really seduced by actors just given a gonzo performance. And more of that. Yes, go farther, do it. And
Jesse Buckley is acting 100%, more than 100%. And there's tons of great actors in this, and all of them are Christian Bale is like doing a thing. Everybody's doing a thing.
Maggie Gyllenhaal's brother, Maggie Gyllenhaal's husband, the whole family's in
the whole family's in this. Yes. They're, none of it works. I mean, there is a tiny little fraction of this movie. This like Penelope Cruz as the detective in a time where women couldn't be detective thing. Like good if stuff. That was its own movie, it had nothing to do with Frankenstein. And like, I'm interested in that character. Like the woman who has to sort of pretend to be the secretary, but secretly solves all the crimes. Like that's a fun concept for a movie. It's barely any of this movie, but it's a cool thing. I'm into that movie. Let's watch that. I like Penelope Cruz. She's great. I love watching Annette Bening work in this movie too. Again, the movie's terrible in my opinion, but you get actors acting. And the problem is that like, it feels so indulgent in the just gonzo performance thing. It's like, yes, go more, go more, go more. Which is not good for the storytelling. And it rarely is, you know, like you need to have constraints. You need to have really strong framework to house a gonzo performance, in my opinion, for it to actually work. You'll see that sometimes you'll get these really incredible gonzo, you know, these wild, you know, takes, these characters in a film that are barely constrained by the movie. This movie does not constrain its characters at all. It is just off the rails, in my opinion, and none of it works. Like you said, Devendra, this Mary Shelley thing just feels like, hey, look at Jesse Buckley can do this weird possession gimmick, and look at her fun accents that she can bop in and out of. It's impressive, but does it serve the story? No. And almost at any point in this movie, does what anybody is doing on screen serve the story? No. Do I at any point of this film have any sense of what the main character wants? No. At no point do I have any. I know what Frankenstein wants, kind of, but at no point the main character of this movie, whatever you want to call her, the bride, I have no idea what she wants. And at the end of the movie, which I won't spoil at all right here, but like, she sort of makes this big 180 and now wants a thing that I didn't think she wanted the whole time. Like I had no idea what she wanted. So the movie just fails on a basic storytelling level for me and just feels like a very self-indulgent masturbatory exercise in wild acting, which I, as somebody who has lived through many self-indulgent masturbatory theater experiences and, you know, things, I have very little patience for. So I did not like this movie at all.
I had a very similar experience. I think I mostly found the movie to be quite disorienting. And it would do this thing where I would finally start to figure out what is actually happening in the film, and then it would just all of a sudden change modes. So as an example, like we just talked about the opening scene, and I'm like, okay, so, you know, in my head, I'm putting it together like, all right, so it's Mary Shelley, but it's in a world where the Frankenstein story that she wrote actually exists in the real world. And then now she's possessing this woman, and then she's just saying, she's kind of like a human thesaurus where she's like saying synonyms for words that Ida is saying, but in a British accent, and that's how you know it's her. And then in the Harley Quinn accent is like the actual woman. And then it's like really like right when I like kind of put that all together, it's like, oh, and now we're changing it. Now she's a social justice warrior, you know, like she's leading a whole thing. Now we're focusing on Dr. Frankenstein. Now this is a police detective procedural movie, or like the whole idea. First of all, the whole Frankenstein wanting to find a mate, like that in and of itself is kind of interesting. And the idea of wanting to do a feminist reimagining of that story, I think, is worthwhile.
In the book, by the way, that's just from the book. Yeah.
Yeah. But then like trying to be like, and by the way, she's inspiring people to rise up against the existing social order, and also now there's a police procedural story. It just feels like they tried to like throw everything, as you said, against the wall and see what sticks. They're just every single idea was put into this film without any consideration for how you need to like develop these ideas and and give them space and have them play out, as opposed to just like, maybe we should make her like, she should inspire the masses of women. They should all have that mark next to her, you know, maybe we should have this feminist story about how it's the woman detectives that are really doing all the work. And it's like, okay, like I'm not against any of those aims in concept, but in order for that to be successful, the movie needs to actually feel like it's telling a coherent story, and like each of these individual subplots are getting their getting time to be fleshed out and getting their time in the sun. And I think the movie just utterly fails at that, unfortunately. So I also kind of agree with you guys that this was sadly not very good. But I will say this, I thought the movie looked very good. You know, the movie cost around $80, $90 million. And I do think it's all up there on screen. Like, I do think it does look like they put a lot of work and time and effort into this film. I will say that I did not feel like chemistry is a very hard thing to define, but I did not think that Jesse Buckley and Christian Bale had any chemistry together personally.
Yeah.
Like and that can go a long way. Like that can like really basically save a film if it's like, oh, the movie around them is challenging, but like Jesse Buckley and Christian Bale, like they work together. I don't think they really work together. Like,
yeah,
it feels like they're in kind of two different films almost.
Think of like Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway in Bonnie and Clyde, which this movie is just trying to be. You're really trying to force that, and it's not there.
Yeah. Or Sid and Nancy. Like it wants to be Sid and Nancy. It wants to be Bonnie and Clyde, and it fails spectacularly in those goals, in my opinion. And I have more to say in spoilers about their relationship too. But I totally agree that it does not work.
I do kind of wonder, like, this movie was apparently delayed for a year. Like, I think people realize it may be kind of messy, but I've never seen a movie lose an audience in the first 5 minutes so hard. Or at least be completely like, what are you doing? Why are we here? Why are we doing this? I do wonder, like, if any of that feedback was ever, you know, given to Maggie Gyllenhaal or something. Like, I wonder where this kind of went wrong, because now it's kind of like a fascinating mess to me.
The Mary Shelley possession thing is so superfluous to any other part of this movie, but it could have been a really fascinating concept to explore. But like, there's other fantastical elements that sort of take center stage, and for large swaths of this movie, it just is forgotten about. The whole Mary Shelley thing is just forgotten about, and it's like, what point was that? It's very incoherent.
It's also like, it's Mary Shelley, but the reality of a world where Dr. Frankenstein actually existed and there were stories about his experiment. Like, it's, I don't, how do you combine those? How does
I'm
that
just gonna
work?
I'm going to put this out there, guys.
Yeah.
If I was a writer who had died and went to hell, and then I was able to possess a random person who lived in a world where my books actually existed in real life, I'd be freaking out about that the whole time. I'd be like, wait a second, like this character exists.
I don't even think it's the book. I think it actually existed. I'm saying the actual happenings of what happened in the story of Frankenstein.
Yeah, like
existed.
She wrote a true crime novel
basically,
in the context of this movie.
The doctor refers to Dr. Frankenstein's work as sort of like a thing that happened. So confusing.
Well, to say the least.
But I'm saying in Mary Shelley's, like, rewind time for Mary Shelley. Like, in her universe, the Dr. Frankenstein stuff did not happen, right? Like,
we're saying it seems like what she wrote was a firsthand account of stuff that really went down.
That's kind
of how this movie is. It seems like Mary Shelley.
It's so confusing.
Created a historical record, basically.
Yeah.
And
then she's sort of imagining her world as the real world.
That's what I assumed. I assumed it was the latter. You know?
Right. So then she's not like, there's no like inhabiting a real world. It's just her own imaginings.
Then it's dream space.
Running wild.
Yeah.
I felt like what I got this sense of her sort of beyond death feeling wronged by men in general and wanting to sort of, shoehorn her own universe into this feminist screed about the various ways women have been wronged and, you know, and I mean, I think that's the through line of the movie is that here is this woman who finally, like, because she has been reanimated, no longer gives a shit and will stand up and say the things that you're not supposed to say. Like, you're not supposed to rat out the mob bosses. You're not supposed to, you know, say, you know, you're not supposed to be this strong kind of independent woman in a if the whole concept of, like, you're just a bride. You have no name. You're just, you're defined by being the accessory to Frankenstein. And all of a sudden now we're going to infuse you with your own identity for once. And what is your, I mean, the whole beginning of the movie is, what is your name? Well, you'll tell me your name at a certain point. But again, all of this is so incoherent and messy that it loses any kind of impact at all.
It's also a strange thing, Jeff, where I feel like all that stuff you just said, which is well stated, is a worthwhile exercise. Like,
yes, I agree with that too.
That is actually, like, worth doing. And yet how this film goes about doing it is in a way that I think really fails to connect with most audiences, it seems.
Yeah.
So the movie got a C+ cinema score, which is pretty rough. This is not going to be one where word of mouth is going to drive it to success. And yeah, I support the movie's aims, but not its methods. That's the problem. Devendra, what were you going to say?
I mean, again, you don't need to reimagine Mary Shelley as a feminist writer and as a woman doing things that people say women shouldn't do. She did that in her lifetime, in her book, in the book Frankenstein, too. And also in the way she lived. So it's like she was already kind of a wild person. He was not, like, constrained by societal norms to many degrees. So again, what are we doing here then?
I would put, by the way, Jesse Buckley as, like, the best actor who's been in almost no movies I like. Like, I really liked Women Talking.
Yes.
That's the only movie she's been in that I liked. Although I haven't seen a couple of them, but most of the movies that she's been in, I really do not like, even though I think she's immensely talented.
I will say, Jeff, first of all, I really loved I'm Thinking of Ending Things as well. I thought she was amazing in that. I think The Lost Daughter is actually a really good film. It was nominated for Academy Awards.
Maggie Gyllenhaal's first movie, right?
Right. In my opinion, could not be more different than this film. Like, very, very understated, very subtle in many ways, and big fan. So do not let your aversion for The Bride !! turn you off from checking out The Lost Daughter, which I think is remains
The Bride, Hamnet, what else? Men, like, very few movies she's been into I like.
She was in Chernobyl. She was great in Chernobyl. Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't even watch Fingernails.
I did not
watch God.
The Apple TV Plus movie. Yes, I'm a diehard Jesse Buckley fan. So, like, it brings me no joy to talk about this movie and how not great it is. I don't know, by the way, have you seen the, Devendra, have you seen this, like, controversy online about her opinion on Cats?
No.
Like, the musical?
The musical? No.
Although, by the way, I would say The Bride is similar to Cats in that I felt similarly leaving the theater for both films.
I did not hear. What does she say?
Like, like the actual animal is what you're
talking actual
about.
Animal. So apparently she's married and she's dating this guy, and the cat that he had hated her, apparently, like, would leave, like, poop on her pillow or whatever. And so she basically said, hey, if we're going to be together, you have to rehome your cat. And people are like, wow, that's really effed up that you made your significant other rehome their cat. And it's become a whole thing. And then she had to go on Jimmy Fallon and clarify, I don't hate cats. I love cats. Because
that one cat was a bastard.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. I would,
some cats are bastards.
You poop on my pillow. I'm not happy.
Yeah. But anyway, it's interesting because it basically, like, there's a lot of attention being given to these actors right now because it is Oscar like Oscar voting time period. And so you're seeing a lot of analysis of like Timothy Chalamet and like Jesse Buckley's anti-cat ways. And it's like, could these things swing?
Why would Timothy Chalamet
voting?
Go against the opera fans and the ballet fans? Yeah. You know how dedicated those people are?
Chalamet's going against opera fans.
Art forms?
Jesse Buckley's going against cat fans.
Don't poke that hive.
It's chaos out there.
It's chaos.
Yeah. All right. Spoilers.
Also, by the way, I also want to say I hated everything Christian Bale was doing in this movie.
Oh yeah.
Let's talk about that, Jeff, before we get to spoilers. And like, what did you hate about it?
Everything. Everything he did.
I'm going to need you to be a little more specific.
I do not like this like weird version of Frankenstein that he came up with that is like part gangster, part moron, part movie loving dancer. Like, I don't. I mean, obviously,
part
a lot of that's
coward
in the script.
Too. Like he doesn't fight back necessarily early on. It, yeah,
it's a like every the way he speaks, the way he, like everything he does in this movie is just I don't. Again,
you know, Jeff, this is the second Frankenstein depiction in the last 12 months that you have not been. Is it possible you just don't like depictions of Frankenstein? Period.
Wow.
Because you did not like Jacob Elordi, and let me just say that was a very different take.
Getting some anti-Frank vibes over here.
Yeah,
yeah, from Jeff. Yeah.
You know what's funny is I think the best. There's been a lot of Frankenstein stuff lately. I think my favorite Frankenstein movie of the last 5 years is oh God, I'm not going to be able to
Lisa
come up
Frankenstein?
The title. Lisa Frankenstein.
Lisa right? Frankenstein.
It's actually a fun movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like what Zoe Rose Bryant said on X about this film, The Bride. She says, when this ended, my mom asked me how it fit into the other one. And I was like, what are you talking about? And it was then that she revealed she'd watched the entire movie, assuming it was a sequel to Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein.
Incredible.
And Christian Bale played an older Jacob Elordi, end quote. Which,
to a certain degree, sure.
Love that.
Yeah, that could work.
Love that.
Yeah, it can. It totally works.
It doesn't conflict with anything that's happened in this film.
I will say this about the Christian Bale Frankenstein. People would walk into rooms and scream when they see him because he looks so horrific. He still looks like Christian Bale.
I know.
He's got some stitches. Yeah. Sure. But he has the jawline, he's the cheekbones, like he's a handsome man. Shut
makes
up.
No sense.
You're not screaming. No sense. What are you screaming for?
All right, let's get the spoilers for The Bride starting right now.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth.
Inconceivable.
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
Can I tell you guys when this movie really, really lost me?
We're
in the middle of a dance sequence in like the third act, right?
Which one? Which one, DaVinci? Because there's multiple.
They're playing Putting on the Ritz. Okay. It's like, it's not enough just to play the song that references Young Frankenstein. Christian Bale has to shout, Putting on the Ritz.
Yeah, in the
he
same.
He has to shout
like,
it out.
Putting the Ritz.
He has to do it.
It's ridiculous.
Just stop.
All right, Jeff. What were you saying about how the bride completely reverses her thing that she was looking for?
Well, so the movie really wants you to buy into this love story at the end, which at no point did I buy into. And you talk about the lack of chemistry between the actors, between the characters. I agree 100%. There was no chemistry. But also, the movie goes to great pains to show you how he is manipulating her and lying to her and, you know, confusing her, intentionally confusing her. And so I'm not on the page at all because the movie has done so much work to put me not on the page at all of them and their love romance. I'm not rooting for this grand, you know, Bonnie and Clyde-esque romance that against all odds, they die in a hail of bullets at the end. And oh my God, the only thing I want is for them to come back to life so they can be together. Fuck you. No, I don't care. It's like, shit, this guy has treated her like garbage and has lied to her throughout the entire movie about who she was, hid her actual reasons, like come up with fake stories about how he proposed to her. None of that is like authentic romantic truth that you root for with characters. So how do you expect me to be cheering at the end when, oh, they get to come back to life? Oh, I love him more than anything. Annette Bening, do you love him? Yes. What? Since when? We all have this moment at the big moment at the drive-in before he gets shot in the head. She's basically like, I'm not your bride, dude. I'm my own woman. I'm my own thing. Like, none of it is this grand romance. And so I don't understand how the movie asks us to applaud for their, you know, being together and for what'd she say? Like, to the end of time or something. It's like, what? Who cares?
Yeah, I guess that's true. But, you know, my interpretation was that when he got shot in the head, it made her realize how much she really cared about him.
Yeah, sometimes you don't know what you have until it gets shot in the head.
You know?
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. What the easiest through line for any movie is a revenge story. And this movie feels like it actively even goes against the idea of, like, maybe she should be mad at the people who killed her. Maybe we should, like, have that realization earlier. She gets her revenge on the freaking gangster. To me, that would be at least like a thing. By the way, Zlatko Burek. Once again, everything's coming up Zlatko.
Amazing, dude, so much amazing year for Zlatko Burek, who was in Superman. He was also in the original Pusher trilogy, My Dickless Winding Refn. Yes. Amazing series of films.
Everything. What movie is he not in?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in everything recently. But again, great stuff. We just never get into the fact that these guys killed her accidentally. Like, at least she should be a little mad. She should have some motivation to resolve what happened to her. Nothing. This movie doesn't go there at all. What are we doing?
The henchman who follows her and decides not to shoot her until he's in a place that he cannot escape. I like that. That guy's so smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bride.
The bride. Also, dude.
You should say The Bride in the same way you say The Aristocrats, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Talk about the movie and then say The Bride.
What, like, a mess this is.
The Bride. Also, how angry did it make you? It made me very angry when Peter Skarsgård is like, she was shooting in self-defense. I don't understand why everybody's mad. It's like, did you see the same scene that I saw?
Penelope Cruz is like, buddy. Like, yeah, she was swinging a gun around. A whole crowd of people. This movie takes time to make fun of the name Penelope. How rude. How rude. It's a name an old lady would have. Penelope Cruz is right there.
I know. It's very funny. It's Why? Like you literally cast a Penelope, dude. What, are you going to make fun of Annette next? What? Come on. The scene where Frankenstein's monster and his bride are like getting matching tattoos at the park. Like that alone, I'm like, what are we doing here, movie?
What are we doing here? I saw this in the Joker movie once. Yeah.
Why was that your reaction, Jeff? What do you mean by
that? Okay, so we literally have at least two moments in the movie where someone just, as Devendra referenced, just seeing Frankenstein's monster loses their shit because they can't handle just the sight of him. And these two are going to stroll into a tattoo parlor.
They're also nationally wanted at this point. The tattoo artist would make money by calling them in, probably. Strolling.
Yeah. It's this movie is a total mess.
I think my quote unquote favorite part of the movie was when Peter Skarsgård retires from shame.
Sarsgaard. He's not a Skarsgård.
Sorry, Sarsgaard, yeah.
Sarsgaard.
Because if there's one thing we know about cops in all of their depictions of popular culture, it's that they can be ashamed of their actions and they retire spontaneously.
The revelation that he's a dirty cop this whole time, just like coming out of complete nowhere. I'm a dirty cop. Oh, what? What? Okay.
And therefore, I'm retiring and giving and bestowing upon you, Penelope Cruz, the rank of detective. I guess that's how it works, maybe?
You can do that. It's like a knighthood. Yeah.
Anyway, despite everything we have just said.
Go ahead. The whole, like, reverence to movies and movie making and old-timey dance, you know, like, you know, I don't even know how that fits into the movie. Like, that's a whole...
Yeah.
It gives so much time to them going to the movies and loving movies. And I don't even understand what that is supposed to represent or...
Also, the cops are finding you at the movies. Stop going to the movies. They're tracking you at the movies. Stop!
Well, despite everything we have just said... at the end of the day, it is impressive that Maggie Gyllenhaal made a movie.
You know what? Again, I say maybe not. Again, I say maybe not.
Disagree. Disagree.
$90 million. $90 million to this.
Yep. Well, yep. You know, sometimes you got people got to take a chance. And
you know, one thing you could say, Dave, is that it was a big swing.
That's right. Big swing. You could say big that. Swings over here. You could say that.
Letting Maggie Gyllenhaal release this movie in its current form. Big swing. Big swing over here.
I mean, that is, I will say that is a little shocking, right? That like,
yeah,
that no one put a stop to this at some point along the way. Anyway.
I mean, she's Oscar nominated, right? Like at least her first movie got a lot.
Yeah, she used up her, like she awards. Used the juice that she got from the Oscar nomination to make this, right? So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yep.
That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of the podcast. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McEwen from The Midnight. Check out their new album, Syndicate. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode with video assistance provided by Kurt Mecca and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, guys, Jeff Cannata going to be out.
Right.
Just you should just play the warning sound right now.
See, spring break.
Everyone knows what it is. Yeah.
On.
Yeah.
And
it's time.
And if there is a fortuitous sequence of events that's going on right now, which is there is a new 4.5-hour long movie that's coming out in Portugal. It's called Kill Bill: The Whole Bloody Affair. Although I think in Portugal it's called something different. It's let me see if I can. I took a photo of it. A Kill Bill Toda a Obra Sangrenta, which means I believe the whole bloody work. I think that's what that means in Portugal.
Okay.
So Jeff's going to be out and wasn't super thrilled about watching a 4.5-hour long movie.
Meanwhile, I do love Kill Bill. I love Kill Bill.
Not
I would
enough,
have done
apparently,
it.
Jeff.
Not it's just a lot. It's a lot, you know?
It is a lot.
And the 4.5-hour long movie is going to be playing at a local cinema for me. And it's available right now on video on demand in the United States.
Amazing.
And so next week, Devinder Hardawar and I are going to be doing something that we've wanted to do for many months, which is review.
For many years. Come on.
Yeah.
This is decades.
Arguably decades. Arguably decades. We are going to be reviewing Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair, next week here on the Filmcast. I'm excited about this. And Devinder, you saw this in the theater, right? How long was the intermission? How long was the intermission, by the way?
10-15 minutes.
10 minutes?
I will warn you all, or I guess warn you, if you leave time for trailers, I don't know if they do that in Portugal, don't leave time for trailers for this one. Yeah.
I will tell you one thing that's like I've had to adjust to is... like in Portugal, the showtime is 3:30 and the movie will start at 3:40, like 10 minutes afterwards.
Yeah.
So there's no Nicole Kidman or anything like that, you know? So
it really is Shangri-La over there.
Yeah. Still a delay. But I will tell you guys this. If Kill Bill was playing in theaters still, I would sit my ass down and go for another 4.5 hours of Kill Bill this weekend. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can look forward to that. I'm really excited about it. This is the culmination of a lot of stuff right here on the Filmcast. Next week, Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. They are Devinder Hardawar and Jeff Cannata. I'm David Chen. See you later.